In music, you can buy things. You can buy popularity. You can buy your status. In golf, that's just not the case. You are worth what you are capable of doing, and you can't hide from it. I see guys who are angry who don't practice. And I go, dude, you haven't earned the right to be angry. How do you expect to come out here on a Saturday? You've been working at a desk all week. You're locked up. You don't do mobility drills. You do nothing physical fitness wise. You don't hit balls. And now on a Saturday, you're expecting to come out here and play well.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Gabe, welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Good to have you on. My first question, are you out of Canada?
Yeah,
are you Canadian?
Yeah. Out in Canada, British Columbia is where I am right now, born and raised in Toronto. Thanks for having me on, by the way. I appreciate you reaching out. This is I'm excited to chat.
Absolutely. Well, I found your stuff just on Instagram, and I always tell, you know, guests or whoever we talk to, like, golf is it's a cool, like, industry and cool world to be in. Like, you know, I sell software for a living, but like, I started the podcast with a buddy, and we love it. They're like passionate about the sport. And it's really cool how like small it is and how you meet people really, really quick. I just came across your stuff and I loved I think you do a bit on like people's best takes they have in golf. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is that, so like where did all this start? Like you're kind of gaining followers quick. And I see obviously you've got a decent swing yourself. So like how did you start like your call it channel or following? And then like I saw your co-founder of Phantom Golf. Like what does Phantom Golf do? And then we'll just kind of talk about some of the fun stuff that you post and talk about.
Yeah, so it all kind of goes back to actually like 2019. I actually come from the music business. So I'm a platinum selling audio engineer was my main career. And I had kind of gotten to a point in the music business in 2019 where I was just burnt out. And I was just like, I love making music. I'm not a fan of the business, you know, and it's just not, it's not merit-based, right? And so because it's not merit-based, I just realized there were some gaps in my life. And oddly enough, whenever I would kind of go through these ebbs and flows of music, I would always turn to golf as a place to go to make myself feel better. So when I was 14, that's when my parents split up and I had to choose between golf and music. I love golf and I kind of had music as a passion. I kind of had to pick one just because of the way life worked. And I picked music, obviously. And so just rolled with music. But there was always this part of me that just always kept coming back to golf. Like my brother and I loved golf when we were young. We built a driving range in our basement. Like we hung a sheet from the roof and we, you know, took old carpet tiles from my grandmother's office and made a fake putting green. And we would, you know, hit balls all the time. And our Nonna, we're Italian. She had a huge like property where we would hit balls and it was like a driving range for us. So golf was like something I always loved, but then it just kind of took a back burner to music and it just kept reappearing whenever I wanted to find happiness. You know, I'd have these lulls in my music career and I'd be like, I just turned to golf. And so finally I reached my breaking point and I was like, you know what? I'd been watching a ton of golf YouTube at the time in 2019, because in the midst of making all these records and I was working a lot on country music at the time, as you're editing a lot of the stuff, you're editing drums, you're editing stuff, you can honestly do so much of it by eye that you don't actually have to listen as you edit. So I have like an ultra wide monitor and I've got, you know, my music stuff on like three quarters of it. And then in the corner, I would just have golf YouTube running all day. So it'd either be the golf channel, YouTube, whatever, like it's just golf all day running in the studio. And so this is when like Golf Sidekick was really going off. TXG was like kind of reaching their pinnacle and they're from Toronto. You know, Brian Bros, like early GM golf days, Brody Smith was like making golf content at the time. Like there was just, I was just like, let's go. And technology was changing in music where I didn't need a studio anymore. Also, I used to have like a 2,500 square foot studio with a control room and all the things. And I saw that the need for all that was changing. And so I decided to make a huge life change. And my girlfriend's actually from the West Coast. And she's like, you know, you can golf 365 days a year in British Columbia. It's the only place in Canada you can golf. Like we get winter basically everywhere else. Now, you know, we get like a month of winter out here in British Columbia, but you can basically golf the most here of any place in Canada. And so I said, okay, then I'm stopping this Toronto, like February minus a million life.
It's and, like Ryan.
Yeah. And I'm going to start doing my winters there and we'll figure it out. And so I decided, you know what? I was completely self-taught in music. I went from not knowing how to literally plug in an RCA cable when I was 18 years old to when I was 24, I had a Billboard number one audio engineering credit with Shawn Mendes. And so in that time frame, I had learned a skill basically through YouTube and just maniacal discipline and hard work. And I thought, if I can do that in a field that is arguably very full of shit and very just not merit-based, right? Like, it's, you know, as cool as it is to say I have some of these credits in music, I would trade all of them to shoot 62 in a tournament consistently. Because it's just not the same, in my opinion. It's not the same. You can fake the numbers. In music, you can buy things. You can buy popularity. You can buy your status. You know, there's a lot of things that are paid for, and there are people that are successful that aren't nearly as talented as they represent. In golf, that's just not the case. You are worth what you are capable of doing, and you can't hide from it. And, you know, that's what I love about the PGA Tour, is that you cannot buy your way into Sunday, into the final contending group. It's just not the thing. So I'm obsessed with that. And so I figured if I could apply my psycho discipline to something that is completely objective, which is golf, how far can that take me? And so my first goal was, okay, I'm going to start the channel. I'm going to document, you know, at the time I was like roughly a 10 handicap. You know, I'd never broken 80. I had never really kept score. I had played less than 100 rounds my entire life. And I was like, my goal is to break par by October 1st. And so I documented that whole process. And then COVID happened, which was like a weird kind of thing. Cause then there's this whole golf boom and there's a golf creator boom. And so it was kind of funny how all this kind of happened, because I had this kind of plan before any of this happened, but then life has a weird way of kind of rolling out. And so then I documented that, and I ended up beating it by a month, and I shot 4 under on a Greg Norman, like, sick course in Ontario called Windance. I shot 4 under my first round under par. And I beat the challenge by a month. And then I started doing my winters here in British Columbia so that I could have an off season and train. And so my goal from there has been to try and become a professional golfer. And so that's what I've been doing basically nonstop. And so right now I'm in what I call the off season, which is, we're in off season 5 right now, where I document just like, historically when I was doing music full time, you know, these months were always a little more down period. I just found with records, like, people aren't really making records towards the end of November. Music industry kind of dies in December. Then in January, people sort of want to make stuff, but they don't really know. And then like the rush kind of comes February, March, when everyone's trying to rush to make their summer records. So I always had this lull where I would just go psycho and practice like a madman and see how good I can get. And I've been trying to work on that. And so it's just every year has just been that evolution. And then Phantom Golf kind of came into play, because through doing all this work on my own game and going through the trials and tribulations of trying to figure this out, and like we all do, I'm a very intense person. If you guys haven't been able to gather through the first couple minutes, this I'm a bit much.
And
so, through being a bit much, I'm trying to optimize just every part of my game and trying to solve problems and find where I'm deficient. I realized that there was a huge area in a golf equipment that was completely untapped, and that is the shoe market. And I realized that golf shoes in particular were not setting up the athlete to succeed. And I came to this realization because my current coach is Ryan Holly, who's Nick Taylor's golf coach. And he is a ground force expert and an absolute genius. And I cannot speak more highly of this guy, just of the things he has taught me. But when he started looking at my ground forces, it just made me realize really like the value of the feet in the swing and how we shift our weight. And I think what has made me transition the most from a good amateur into now on the path to becoming a pro golfer is understanding the use of the ground. And I think that's the big difference between a pro and an amateur, is that they are able to use the totality of their body to make their golf swing happen. And I then realized that shoes in particular, if you look at other sports, you look at marathon running, you look at, you know, just other sports, there's innovation happening. Like in marathon running, the shoes got so good, they had to ban them from competition because they were affecting marathon times to such a level that it was insane. And now, you know, in golf, I feel like we're actually retreating. Like if you look at shoes from like 2006 to 2010, they're arguably better than they are now. We have less spikes on a lot of shoes than we do now. You know, you're getting more stylistic aesthetic products versus products that make the athlete better. And for some golfers, that's what they like. Totally fine. Everyone experiences the game differently and everyone has a different way they want to play. Someone like myself, and I found with a lot of other golfers who want to kind of push their performance, is that, you know, you're leaving something on the table by not looking at how your feet are interacting with the ground. And so we developed the shoe to optimize your ground forces to help you get more out of your swing, especially because, you know, golf's played on a very uneven, unstable surface where you're on weird angles and it's a very funky game. So we launched Phantom last August, 2024, and it's been really cool. And that was kind of, again, by accident discovery of just me going through the rabbit hole, testing gear, turning over rocks, and ultimately trying to solve a problem for myself, because I was struggling to find a shoe that had enough traction and enough stability and enough comfort for the amount of training that I do.
Yeah, So I have a million questions now. My first and the most hopefully easy one you can answer is, when you say you want to become a professional golfer, what does that mean to you? Because you can... Technically, you could become a professional golfer today, right? Like, you can be like, hey, I'm a pro. I'm going to start, you know, signing up for tournaments that could potentially make me money, and I'm going to get rid of my amateur steps. So my first question is, like, your road to becoming a pro, like, what does that mean, and how do you quantify it? Is it like, I'm going to play X amount of tournaments, you know, however many, like, a year, trying to make, like, this amount in earnings and, like, play on mini tour? Like, how do you define like getting to that, achieving whatever that goal?
Yeah. So first step is I want to get to a +6 as an amateur. Cause I feel like until you're a true +6 in tournaments as an amateur, I could theoretically become a pro now. But I wouldn't make any money and I would just be a vanity pro.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You'd be making a donation, right?
Correct.
Every tournament.
And so I'm very lucky. Where I am in British Columbia, I have found a community of golfers out here, and there just is a community of golfers out here of like really top tier guys. And, you know, Nick Taylor and Adam Hadwin are from here. There's just a crew of like really solid players. And so the baseline of player that I'm around and get to see is quite high. And like the guys who are out here training, like they translate well to PGA Tour Canada, you know, open qualifiers. You see these guys kind of popping up all over. So I've kind of came up with that standard for myself of like, I got to become a +6 in tournaments here locally against those guys. And then if I can do that, then I'll escalate the conversation from there. My ideal is like, I like to operate at a professional level at whatever I do. I'm not very good at passive hobbies. So part of the thing about being a pro for me is also just like acquiring a professional level skill set. So when I was in music, and my main core competency in music was mixing and mastering. So if you're the artist and you give me your stems, right? And so basically what a mix engineer does is you give me your kick, bass, snare, all the different elements. And it's my job to glue it together and really make it sound like a finished product that you would hear on Spotify or the radio or whatever. And I was able to get to a skill set with that where you can basically send me any song, any genre, it didn't matter. And what was in my head versus what came out of the speakers was the exact same. And that's so much fun. Like when you have that kind of creative power over what you do, it's like the most addicting feeling, because your ability to execute your ideas seamlessly is the fulfillment it for me is like, that's what I want. So when it comes to golf, my whole goal is like, I want to be able to hit the shots and execute the round as seamlessly from what I envision to what I can physically execute. And I think it's taken me a long time I've gone down some poor roads to get to that point, but I've recalibrated and I've tested a lot of things. And I feel like right now I'm probably on the best road I've been on to achieve that. And so step one is +6 as an amateur, compete in professional events here locally. And then anything beyond that, we'll see.
Okay, so now I need to ask, because so my goal this year is to try and get to a plus three. Where are you currently at?
According to Golf Canada, I'm like a four right now. I've actually regressed quite a bit because I did a complete swing teardown in April.
Yeah, you gotta get worse to get better.
So I got as high as a plus two, but I was I didn't. So this is the other thing I've learned through this journey is you can be a very good amateur, and you can get like pretty high handicap wise, but it's not going to translate to professional. And and the reason for that is if you watch like true good pros, it's like the day-to-day volatility is just not there. So I got to a plus two with a swing that was just never going to win a professional event ever. Because
you reached your ceiling with the swing that you had.
Correct. And it was a very like, if I could play my game and I could like own it. And I probably, if I wasn't so maniacal in my way of wanting to go about things, I probably could have just chilled there and like been between a plus two and a two and or whatever, and just kind of like hovered around there and life would have been fine. But to get to that plus six and beyond, and really like a true pro is like around a plus nine, right? Like if like guys on tour are like plus nines, right? There is a mechanical difference to how they play the game that I think is required. And so I have been pursuing that. And I think that's what caused a lot of my recalibrations. But within that, I've learned a lot. And I feel like now this, like, I'm not a four right now. I'm probably closer to a scratch or even a plus one. But they don't count scores in the winter because it's like lift, clean, and place and whatever. Like, you know, whatever we, like, you can enter all the scores you want and Golf Canada won't count it towards your handicap. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, a handicap is just a metric for you to track, you know, how you're playing, right? Your best round out of your last, whatever it is now, it's 16 or 20 or whatever. So I want to go down the road of like, what are you doing, right? So, you know, for me, like, it's the off season. I'm spending a lot more time in the gym and working on like mechanical stuff as well. Like right now, I'm really working on my takeaway and coincidentally the ground force. This is hilarious. I texted my coach today and it was in all caps. And I said, I just hit balls for 2 hours. And then I go into all caps. I need to keep my feet planted into the ground through impact. That's why I was hitting it so shitty with all my clubs the past week. Which is like ground force, right? Like actually using the ground and early extending and doing all that. It's like, what are you working on in the off season right now? Like a ton of our audience listens to, you know, find the nuggets of how to get better, especially like we're here in Minnesota. So, you know, we don't get to play really any golf this time of the year. I think last year we had, you know, few weeks out of the winter where like snow went away and people played outside. But to your point, like you're not logging any of that. It's just kind of, you know, to be able to say you did it. Like, what are you doing right now? Like, what is the clear path like that you have set out for yourself to, you know, once the season comes around and you start playing, you're shooting low scores to get to a plus six, what are you working on in the off season? What's the technical stuff or mental stuff you're doing?
Yeah. So the good, I was able to get a lot of the technical stuff kind of out of the way because I basically last year ended up becoming a write off of a season because I had gotten to a point in March where I was just like, the direction I was going in wasn't going to work. And so then I switched to a new coach and we decided to just basically like strip it down to the studs and revamp a lot of things. And so that took, that was both a swing thing and also like a body mechanics thing and like a mobility issue. So I actually, like I got a personal trainer and like, I realized like from all the years of sitting in the music studio, like my hips and my back were still jacked up. And I had like, I'm a big proponent of fitness, like, and just, I use golf as a vehicle to also force myself to work out. Like I couldn't work out 5 days a week if it was for like pure vanity. Or even for health, you know, like when I was younger, sure, like, you know, you want to look good for girls and you're like, cool, I'll, you know, I'm down to work out a couple days a week. But, you know, now I need to be motivated by something else. And so what I like about golf is it forces me, like, I want to hit a 4-iron stupid high and like there's a trajectory I want to hit, but I want to
220 high end spinning at 6,000, that fucker stops on a dime.
And I love that. And so I'm able to do that now. And so that becomes addicting because that's a product of working out, right? Like that's not a product of like getting a hot 4-iron that like you, cause you can achieve some of that through equipment or you can achieve that through like earning it. I've become very addicted to like the workout portion. And so I basically, we tore down the swing and we kind of started at the beginning from a lot of the body things. And that started in like June. And so I got a lot of the technical stuff out of the way, basically up to November, December. From here to, from the last 2.5 months, what it's really been is trying to put on some weight. So I want to get to like 182 to 185. I'm 180 today. I was 172.
I got an extra 20 I can give you.
Perfect.
For sure. Like I'm at like 215 right now, trying to get down to 200. So yeah. you can just swap some there.
Perfect. No, I'm trying to gain a little more because like I did a bulk in 2022, 2023. I got up to 190. And I was able to swing really fast and I liked the base I had, but I wasn't as mobile and my swing wasn't as good. So I think a good playing weight for me for just like, cause I want to live at like 180 to 185 ball speed. I think that's just like a good place to operate. And I think just to also compete at a high level, I think that's just like a necessity now. And so, but I need to also build a base of strength to swing my new swing with that. Because the problem I ran into before is I was swinging very armsy and almost like you can speed train and I think you can have like fake speed. And I feel like I had fake speed before. Like I got up to one point where like on the PRGR, like, you know, I hit 116 miles per hour with my
fast
forearm.
Hands, fast arms, swinging. Correct. Very, very, yeah, it's just right. Swinging.
Correct. So I like, you know, I was crushing it on and I had these crazy swing speeds, but I couldn't play golf. I couldn't play the game of golf with that. And so I've dialed it back. I'm like 115 mile per hour now with my driver, but I can play the game of golf. I have a wedge game now. I have a lot of these foundational elements that I just never had. You know, like it got to a point where I would like crush driver off the tee, but if I hit it too good and I was inside 130 yards, like I was screwed because I had no wedge game and I was probably going to line drive it through the green because I just didn't have the finesse and the touch. And there were blatant errors in my swing that were just not allowing me to do that, that I hadn't picked up on.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at long drive people, like, you know, obviously Bryson was a golfer and then did long drive, so it's a little bit different, but he yes. since toned it back down. You don't see many, if at all, long drive guys like become pros. Like I know some are trying to. I follow Kyle Berkshire. I know he's trying to become a pro. He's a very good golfer.
Totally.
But like it gets to this point in the game, and like I know distance and speed and everything is king right now, but it does get to a point that like you don't want to hit your 7-iron 215. You know what I mean? Like the gappings between your 7, 8, 9 and pitching wedge, like then all of a sudden every single wedge shot you have is like a quarter and half shot, and it becomes almost more difficult. It almost feels like there's this sweet spot when you look at the best in the world, Rory, Scotty, like they're kind of stuck. You know, sand and lob wedges are going between 100 and 130, somewhere in there. And then they get to their driver and they hit that like, you know, 330. But if you start to go like too high or too low than that, like you start to get in trouble. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So I'm like 172, 174. But the thing now is that it's getting those ball speeds with a pro swing. So like before I was able to swing like that, my peak swing was like 127 miles per hour in terms of swing speed. But my smash factor was terrible and my control was terrible. So in the peak of my swing speed powers, I had the speed, but I had no control with it. Now that I have good fundamentals and I have the athletic structure to do it versus just throwing my whole body and throwing all my angles to try and generate speed, I'm using workouts and being in the gym and kind of bulking up to create a frame to deliver that power in a more professional way.
Yeah. I mean, the you're right. Like the 180 ball speed mark seems to be what the tour average kind of is now. Maybe not 180. They're probably high 170s though. Like I think he's 185, 186 on average. But yeah, like 180 is probably the...
So I think there's a couple ways to go about it. And I think it all depends on how deep down the rabbit hole you want to go and where you want to kind of place the ceiling of your game. So I think, you know, when I got to a certain handicap level earlier, and I was an early extender, right? So I was like, I had a very flippy early extendo swing. right? If I was that player who didn't want to like waste a couple seasons tearing it down and revamping my body, because the thing too with swing changes, right, is that it takes an absurd amount of time, right? So if you don't want to go down that path, but you want to get better, then what I would say is you optimize what you have, right? So one is I would say, okay, find a shot shape, play one shot shape with whatever that swing is. So if you're an early extendo and you're a right to left guy or a left to right guy, great. Own one shot shape and just exclusively play that. And just, I would just own that. So for me at the time, it was like this like little wipey fade, right? And that's how I got around, and I was able to play some really good golf that way. So that's one way to go about it. Just like realize your limitations. You're never going to be able to hit hero shots. You're never going to be able to hit, you know, maybe create anything crazy spectacular, but you're going to be able to plot your way around. And so then I would just make sure you're continuing to maintain that. One thing that I think is universal throughout the off season for anybody is I think you just need to hit golf balls for at least 5 minutes a day, just to feel what it's like to hit a golf ball. I find like, you know, I have a lot of friends who are dads, and like, they just don't have time to get to the range. You know, like I don't have those kind of family commitments yet. So, and I also joke that like, I am full golf cocaine mode in my life, where like golf is a lot. So I think regardless of whatever your thing is, I think like buy a net off Amazon for $100, set it up in your garage, get a little mat, and just hit. The feeling of hitting a golf ball is just something you have to keep in your hands. And I think just doing that will inherently help, right? And if you're somebody that doesn't have time to invest in a swing change, you're going to play like most of the people who play golf, like you play once a week if you're lucky, you know, or a couple times a month, and you want to get out with buddies and you don't want to play terribly, but you want to still find a way to get better, then realize your limitations, figure out a way to optimize what you currently are. And so then I would say, then make sure your gear is dialed in to optimize what you are. So, you know, like there's certain things you can do with fitting and with gear to mitigate some of your swing faults, right? And I would optimize for that. I'd make sure I hit balls for at least 5 minutes a day, so just have the feel. And then even maintaining that chipping feel, like just chipping into a net for like 5 minutes just helps kind of keep that feeling in your hands, so that when you don't show up on Saturday after you've had a tough week at work and, you know, you've been ripping Excel spreadsheets and now you're trying to like sauce a flop shot, it's like you don't have the touch, right? That's the thing that goes. So a putting mat and like a really cheap garage setup. And I don't even think it matters if you're slicing the crap out of her, like ball direction. I don't even think it matters when you're in that situation. You just need the feeling of contact for this type of.
So I want your take on this, because I am trying to figure out, you know, how I'm going to practice differently this year. And I haven't necessarily written it down or anything yet, but I want your take. And obviously, yeah, this is all game dependent, right? Like, if you're a guy like Rory, you're not going to practice chipping him, or sorry, you're not going to practice driving as much as you do chipping and putting. Or even wedge play, because when you hit it as far as he does, he's got a lot of wedges in. But generally speaking, like, let's say we're talking with a general golfer that wants to get to a scratch golfer, knowing everything that you know now, and obviously the journey that you've been on the last few years, I think of things as a pie chart, right? So when I think of my practice structures, you've got off the tee and driving. You've got your approach to the green, which would be considered your iron play. Wedges around the green, which is chipping. And then putting, those five. And then I'll even throw like mental into there, because I truly believe, like, if you want to get to that level, even like as a elite amateur, like, you have to have a good mental like approach to the game. And then you also have to understand course management, how to get around and like beat the golf course, right? Even on the days that you may not have your best swing. I think that's what makes really good players really good. I'm not the biggest Jordan Spieth fan, but like this past weekend, he talked about like, I found a way to put up a number today, even when I didn't have as good a swing as I had yesterday, where I was just flushing it, right? It's like those kind of six things. If you were to put those in like a pie chart and you have percentages of each, you know, what would you consider the most important, you know, areas to practice, right? Like, you have 2 hours. How much are you spending, you know, practicing driver? How much are you spending kind of chipping and putting? How much, like, right? Like, that's kind of, I think, you know, and again, it's all player dependent, but for you, everything you know now, where would you spend the most time to get the most out of, you know, your practice and ultimately lower scores? Yeah, you just need to hit the ball. It's actually amazing nowadays. You can walk into a golf store and buy like a $100 little track thing and hook it up to your TV or your phone with a HDMI cord and actually get some kind of feedback, you know, it'll measure into your swing.
Yeah, so it's like depending on your level of investment, exactly. If you can get to that, and like I see behind you, you got a nice little screen with you got a tasty simulator going.
I've got a simulator. So yeah, that's my GC. GC Hawk.
Call that the full.
I live in Minnesota, man. I gotta hit
full golf to. Cocaine mode, exactly. So like for you, you know, and I would say then there's, so that's like level one is like, if I didn't have aspirations to become a pro golfer, I just wanted to be a really good amateur and I had like, and I was still doing music full time. That's what I would do. I would just like one shot shape, own it, optimize my gear for that and just maintain the touch.
Yeah. And I think on the mental side of it, it's like realizing the time you can get in is what you put out in golf. Like to your point earlier, when we talked, like, you do kind of have to have the conversation with yourself, like, what am I capable of doing or what am I capable of achieving with the time that I have want to put into it? I tell people all the time, they're like, dude, how'd you get good at golf? Like, I played with you a few years ago. Like, you weren't that good. You were 10 handicap, man, handicap, whatever. And I was like, dude, I fully committed. Like, I fully went in. I love the golf cocaine tip. Like, I fully went. I stopped playing broom ball. I stopped, like, playing basketball at the gym. I, like, you know, when I travel, like, I bring my clubs, like, I play golf, like, on the weekends, I play golf. I love my fiance because she lets me play golf. Like, she has her own things that she does. And, like, you know, I obviously make time to do other things, but, like, my free time is for golf. Like, if I have an hour during the day over lunch, I come in the garage and I hit golf balls. I don't, like, go run errands or go do whatever. Like, I make the time for golf. And, like, that's truly what you have to do. And people don't see, like, the time that goes into it on the back end. But I think people like you that like play a lot or practice a lot, and other people, like once you get to a certain level, like they know what it takes. You know what I mean? Like there obviously are people that have the just God given ability and talent to swing a golf club, like John Daly, right? Like, but you're not John Daly. I know I'm certainly not. Like, it takes a lot of time for me to practice and get good. And that's why sometimes I'll shoot fucking 80 or 85 because like that part of me comes out. But it is like, and that's what makes the sport, I think, so addicting, is that you'll never perfect it. Like, even when you shoot that really good low 8-under round, you have that like back, that putt in the back of your mind, like, oh, that could have dropped. But like that one tee shot is like, man, it cost me like a bogey or whatever it is. That's the just incredible thing about the sport that makes it just so, it just consumes you.
100%. And I like to say, like, one of the things I tell my friends and stuff, I go, you have to earn your anger in golf. Like, I see guys who are angry who don't practice. And I go, dude, you haven't earned the right to be angry. You don't, like, how do you expect to come out here on a Saturday? You've been working at a desk all week. You're locked up. You don't do mobility drills. You do nothing physical fitness wise. You don't hit balls. And now on a Saturday, you're expecting to come out here and play well. Like, there's...
Yeah, shoot the best score you've ever shot. Yeah. Like, oh, this is going to happen
and
today.
And listen, maybe that week, like, there are times where the stars align and that does happen. And honestly, those are the best days and I wish them for everybody. But most of the time, I see guys who just get really frustrated. And I've been frustrated too. I get it. I've been there. But I had to kind of say, like, dude, you got to earn your anger. Like, when I wasn't putting in the reps, I was like, I haven't earned the right to be angry here. I don't practice enough. Like, I'm not doing the things I need to do to put myself in a position to be successful to play golf well. So then, and I think too, if you recognize that, you will enjoy the game more. Because then when you inevitably do hit the bad shot, which everyone does regardless of how much time you put in, you're kind of able to take a step back and be like, oh, you know what, whatever. Like, I'm just happy to be here. I'm grateful for the time, right? And having that grateful mindset, I think, like, just from going so deep into the weeds, I just don't, there's just a dissonance that people have on, like, truly how much you have to change your body to play good golf. And, like, the way tour players move is not the way the general population moves. And this kind of goes to, like, the ground force stuff. And there are people that are athletic, but even, like, you look at professional athletes who still, like, have terribly stiff swings and aren't moving the way a tour player moves. Like, you know, you see these guys in the NFL and the NBA who are like freak athletes who can like jump over moving vehicles and they have crazy verticals. Like, these guys can have feats of athleticism that would blow your mind, but you throw a golf club in their hand and they look like a toddler. Right.
And yeah, it's true.
And
yeah.
And so it just, you know, I've learned there's just so much that goes into optimizing your body for fluid motion. And so then when you have a guy like a John Daly, who's like, just has, just reeks of flexibility and has that just natural wind up and just has the God-given sense of touch. And obviously he worked at it too, not diminishing anything, but I think a lot of people would argue that's a God-given talent he has. You know, he's just a very talented golfer. So I think, you know, there's just so much that you have to do to make your body work right to play good golf. Like, guys on tour, they got physiotherapists and stuff, and like the amount of pliability that they do. No stiff hips on tour. You know, they're not logging hours behind a desk, locking up all week, and then expecting to go out there and rip 180 ball speed down the pipe. Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah. Not to mention the amount of interactions they have with the guy. I mean, the golf season and schedule is like ridiculous when you think about it. If you're a guy that's making the cut pretty consistently, you're playing 5 rounds a week minimum, and then you're practicing and working out the other 2. Like, it's a 7-day a week job. Like, maybe you take a Monday off, and that's why they take weeks off every now and again, right? But like, when they're in the thick of it, they're playing 5 rounds a week. You know, one of those is probably a pro-am, and they're doing, so it's just night and day, and then they're practicing all the other days. And it's just like, you know, I mean, I just went out to Palm Springs for a week and I was pissed because I couldn't chip the ball. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, well, fuck, I mean, I haven't chipped outside in 2 months. What do I expect? Like, yeah, like, I can clip them great here in the simulator, but like, it's off of like artificial turf. It's pretty easy. You get outside and all of a sudden, like, you're into the grain on a downhill line. I think I'm going to hit inside of 10 feet. Like, get real. You know what I mean? So it's stuff like that that I think just gets frustrating for people. And once you sit down and have the comment with yourself, like, am I sitting down? Am I practicing? Am I going to play? Like, it completely changes it. So we're on the same page there.
And I think too, there's so much you can do not golf related to make you better, like in the gym, and both flexibility and pliability stuff that just like, as a human, you should be working on as we get older. Like, I'm 33. You know, we're not getting any younger. We're not getting any more pliable. And I'm finding that, like, I actually feel way better now than I ever felt. And it's just a result of, like, investing in that part. And I think another thing, too, is that, you know, sure, you can go to the range a couple times a week and get those reps in. But I think, you know, and I tell this to my buddies who have kids and stuff who can't maybe hit balls, is that, like, I think if you invest in getting your body into a certain state of good, it allows you to hop into golf quicker and be more good to go.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I spent a ton of time at the chiropractor, in the gym, like doing all these things to get my body in a good spot this off season. So I'm actually pretty pumped for this year to like play with what I think is going to be like a healthy, movable body for the first time in a few years.
Yeah, which is awesome. That's like, that's, and then it's just on a human level. I think that's what's great. Like, I use golf as like a therapy and like a vehicle for self-improvement. Like, therapy never worked for me personally. I found it too much of a, and I, there's no disrespect to anybody that it does work for. I just found for me, like, it just is a way for moving my brain forward in a positive way and kind of like working through things. And so I also found because golf requires you to like optimize yourself as a person to be better. Like, you know, like, for example, in my music career, right? Like, I have a theory that like pain is a requirement of good art. So, you know, it works in your favor to have these broken pieces of yourself and really like bare your soul. And I think that works for a creative energy. Whereas in golf, it's like the opposite. The more you fix yourself, the more you fix your mental state, the more you become a better person, the more you do all these things, I feel like it just leads to better golf. And at least for me. And so I like it also as that exercise, like regardless of like kind of the outcomes, the practice of trying to get better at golf, I find is just also a good life path to be on.
Yeah, I agree. And golf is the sport that like makes life better and more enjoyable. It's like the only thing you can do for 4 hours, and like you learn a lot about somebody, you learn a lot about yourself. It's kind of like this it's almost like a way to kind of meditate too, right? Like walking outside and nature being like a part of what's going around you. And it's just, it's a phenomenal game for a multitude of reasons. And so I have to ask this. I have to end it with this. I love your asking people like what their best golf take is. One, what is yours? And two, what are some of the best that you've gotten answers from?
So I don't take credit for the idea of, have you heard of Subway Takes?
No, I haven't.
It's a TikTok account. And so it's like, I think they're in New York or Chicago, like they're in a major city. And so it's a guy who asks people just their takes on the subway, and it's a phenomenal show. And so I just thought this would be really fun to do as a golf version, because golfers are so opinionated about a variety of different things. So one of my hot golf takes would be, I think golf shoes are the most underrated aspect of your golf equipment. And that's just because for me, through my discovery of golf equipment, I think golf shoes are the 16th, you know, club in the bag. You have your 14 clubs, ball is number 15, and your shoes are number 16. And so I think golf shoes in general, most underrated aspect of gear that people don't think about. And there are people like, you wouldn't play basketball in shoes where you slip. You wouldn't play basketball in Crocs. You know, you wouldn't you get it. Like, you wouldn't play hockey on dull skates. Right. But as golfers, we're willing to accept subpar shoes, and we're mad that we're not striping the ball, when really we can only connect with the game in two ways: our hands with the club and our feet with the ground. And we're not securing our feet to the ground properly. So that's my hot take. One of the best ones we've gotten that I really enjoyed is this guy, Declan. And his take was that we should institute a gallery rule, where if he was playing, like, if, you know, as an amateur golfer, if he was playing at a tour event where there was a gallery and his ball would have been found if there was a gallery, right, then he shouldn't have to play a lost ball. Like, you ever hit it somewhere just a little bit left or right of the fairway, and like, you know, it's not gone, but you can't find it. But if there was 50 people there, they would have found the ball. Right? Like, so he's like, we should have a gallery rule. He's like, if my group, we all agree, there should be a gallery rule. The other one, and the caveat to that too, was like, you know, he said if it was going towards a hazard, you know, then it shouldn't count. But then think of how many times in a tour event there are players who are hitting it and it looks like it's going towards a hazard, and it either banks off a tent or hits off a person and stays in play. And so then, you know, the joke was like, well, if it was going towards a hazard, but if there was a gallery there, would it have bounced off somebody and been fine? You know, he said he would throw that to his group as an option. So I thought that take was really funny. That was very well done.
Okay. So the gallery rule, I love. You want to hear what my take is?
Yeah, hit me. I want to hear your hot take.
My take is that every ball hit, I got to say this the right way, otherwise I'm going to get killed. I think every drop should be a lateral drop unless it's in the water. So like
100%
white stakes down the right and left. If you hit it and it clearly goes down the line, you should be able to drop it, you know, on the line that it goes in. Obviously, if you agree with your playing partners, and everything should be lateral. I don't think there's any reason anybody should have to go back to the tee and re-hit. You take a drop and you either hit three, you know, in the rough or on that line, or you hit four out of the fairway, which is a local rule to a lot of places. One, I think it speeds up play. Two, I don't think there's ever a good scenario where like you hit it out of bounds and you don't like should be able to take the distance that you hit the ball. I just think lateral drops should be like the standard or the norm for all kind of out of bounds. Obviously, when you're dealing with red stakes and it's a water or somewhere else, it can be a little bit different, but it's just stupid to me that with white stakes, you could literally hit it be an inch out of bounds right of the white, and you have to go back to the tee and re-tee. I just think that's stupid.
I agree. I hate white stakes. 100% agree. 100% agree.
I used to be team be able to take your ball out of a divot. I've started almost lean the other way, where like, you know, then it becomes, how do you define a divot? People can take advantage of the rule, but like, I keep on going back to like the point, if it's clearly a divot and your like playing partners agree on it, like you should be able to move it out of a divot. I can't think of any other sport where you could potentially get penalized for hitting a good shot especially in the fairway, for one. And two, there's all these other weird rules that, like, you're actually able to give your ball a better lie. Like, you know, if you hit the ball just short of the green, you're next to a sprinkler head, you can use your driver to give yourself length and put it on the green and start putting, as opposed to having to chip out of the rough. But you're telling me I got to hit my ball like out of a divot when I'm in the middle of a fairway, and not to mention like collection areas at a lot of courses. I just think there's a lot of weird ones, but my hill that I die on is everything should be a lateral drop. White, no white stakes.
I back that. But my only pushback on like divot relief is that, like, just if you're going to get penalized, like people say, oh, but you're going to get penalized by hitting a good shot. But then what about the times you get rewarded when you hit a bad shot and you get lucky? Like you get a good tree bounce or you get things like that. Like the game has inherent luck and misfortune built in. And I also, the caveat I put, and like Max Homa kind of put this out, he's like, unless you're playing for money or in a tournament, who cares? Like, you know what I mean? If you're just playing for fun, like who, do whatever you want. But I think in a tournament, I think you got to eat it.
Yeah, you're right. I just think that, again, when it's in the fairway, like it's a good shot, right? Like that's what you're like, you're supposed to hit the ball in the fairway, and you hit the ball in the fairway, and you're playing somewhere that has collection areas or balls that go down to certain spots. I can't tell you how many times at my club on our hole eight, you know, if you miss short of the green, it rolls down into the fairway. A ton of people do it. You know, there might be 10, 15 balls hit out of there in a single day, and you're in somebody's divot, like now you're automatically staring down a bogey. I don't know. But, you know, it is what it is. I always die on the hill of the lateral leaf. Like you should not have to go back to a tee. I just think it's demoralizing. And
I'm with you on that. And in tournaments, it's the worst when like a guy doesn't think he needed to hit a provisional. And we all were like, no, it's fine. And then now he's got to sprint all the way. It just sucks. It's the worst.
Yeah, I don't like it. So I appreciate you coming on. I got a feeling, man, this is going to be like, we're going to do multiple podcasts together.
Dude, I'm down.
To a plus six, I'm trying to get to a plus three. We might be able to structure these a little bit better where we start talking about specific topics and hold each other accountable for the goals we're trying to meet. But I've already ordered a pair of the shoes.
I can't wait to give it
a review on them. Anything that My Golf Spy says is good, I'm an advocate of. So I'll be sure to put you on to all of our followers and listeners. Keep doing what you're doing. I think it's awesome. And best of luck getting to the plus six and becoming a pro. I can't wait for it to happen.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And this has been a lot of fun. I can't believe how much time we ripped through.
It's already been an hour. We had a little bit of audio and video difficulties, but that's virtual podcast nowadays. We could talk forever. I can tell you're a golf junkie like the rest of us. So I'm excited to keep following the journey and can't wait for the shoes to come.
Appreciate it, man. Well, I can't wait to hear your feedback on them too. I think when you talk about earlier what you were messaging your coach about some of the stuff you were working on ground force wise in your swing, I think you'll really like what the shoes can help with that. We're seeing 1 to 4 mile per hour swing speed differences just with the shoe change.
And that's simply you stay grounded a little more weight, like in the base and the sole and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's actually the beauty. The shoes aren't heavy themselves, but the way we are able to distribute the weight keeps your center of pressure in the right areas. And so not only are we seeing it increase your ground forces, but also it improves the timing of the ground forces. A lot of people struggle with, especially trying to extend that left leg before impact, right? And that's really, if you want to get the most power out to the ball, you want to get that extension, because that's, you know, you're swelling the body, your power kind of up through your body out to the club. And if your leg is extending post impact, well, now you just have a really fast post swing versus pre the ball. And so I think you'll be really cool. And especially with like kind of where you're trying to progress and because you got the opportunity to just smash balls in the sim, I think this will be a nice little off season training help for you.
Yeah. Love it. Can't wait for him to come. We'll continue to stay in touch, Gabe. As always, keep it up with the good content, the good takes. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me on.
All right, brother. Take it easy.